would you introduce yourselves, please?
Hi, I'm Richard. I play bass in the Frights.
I'm Mikey. I play guitar and sing in the Frights.
Hello, I'm Mark, and I play drums in the Frights.
After high school, you did a show for fun. There were other members. Then someone came back from college. And then it's like it's all over the place, right? We're going to do a jigsaw puzzle. You're going to start the story. You're going to be in the middle of the story, and you're going to finish the story. And I want to see how well you actually know how the hell this happened.
Okay. Once upon a time, Mikey Carnevali, who's my bandmate, was in a band in high school, or at the end of high school, that was kind of just a fun surf rock, surf punk band.
Because the world needs, in San Diego, more surf punk bands.
Absolutely.
Southern California, in general, needs more bands like that.
So, Mikey was generous enough. We graced the world with another surf rock band. And meanwhile, Mark and I were in a different band in a different high school, and our bands had played together. At the end of high school, Mikey's surf rock band played a show that Mark and I attended, and we ended up making friends. All of our other friends moved away to college, and the only remaining people here were myself and Mikey. So we decided to start a band.
I heard that everybody moved out of San Diego except the three of you.
Yeah.
Deserted city. And then
me and Richard start this band, just me and him. He's playing guitar and playing drums. And then what happens, we do that for a little bit. And Adam, who was our old drummer, decides to come back from college for winter break. And we're like, hey, dude, you know, let's do one more surf punk show just for fun. We're all bored. You know, let's do this thing. Me and Richard got our thing, but we'll do a one-off show at Soma in San Diego. And he was like, cool. So we all got together. Richard played bass. I wrote 6 songs. We went and did a show at Soma and played the show to no one, maybe like 5 people. Walked outside, and one of the security guards, or I guess the manager of the venue actually turned out to be, was like, hey, man, I'm starting an indie label. Do you guys want to sign? And we were like, oh, yeah, I guess so.
Right after that happens, and the guys, you know, check out this stranger's house, and he doesn't murder them, and he actually does sign them to his brand spanking new indie label. They manage to luck out and get a show at the big stage in Soma, pretty much like, what was it, like a month after that? Fifth show. So not long after that, they opened for Bad Religion, which was kind of like the first of the many, many lucky breaks. And then from there, it was off to the races, I guess.
The San Diego music scene and fitting in. So what music scene does any... I mean, San Diego, let's face it, it's like Warped Tour. But what's the definition of not fitting in to a scene that nobody even knows what the scene is anymore?
Or
is there really a scene?
No. In San Diego, there's right now, as far as I know, there is one scene, and it's the hardcore scene. Right. There's a big hardcore scene. That's the Warped Tour right there. That's it. Yeah. And that's, but it is, but even, yeah, ska. Both have been dying for a little bit, though, down there. It's all kind of falling off. But, I mean, if there is any other scene in San Diego, it's they have a good bar scene and a lot of bar bands, but I don't think that's strong enough to call a scene even. So it's really just, as far as fitting in, we just, not being from LA, it was almost easier to stand out because we weren't fighting against a whole scene in San Diego. If you live in LA, you got millions of bands to fight against, and we were not put up against that problem. So it was actually kind of nice not being in a scene in San Diego.
Note to this, will turn into a story eventually, but what are the hallmarks of a burger band? Who wants to take that one? The hallmarks of a burger band.
Burger Records, if you're going to start from scratch, Burger Records is a record label, obviously, from Orange County that has kind of grown to be this, I guess the closest thing to a scene, yeah, exactly. And I guess the hallmarks of a burger band would include... no showering.
Yep.
Doc Martens. Psych rock influences and a lot of drug use. Long hair, greasy hair, especially.
My type of people.
And, of course, you know, there are a few standout bands that really do shine through the burger scene. But for the most part, it's just that. It's the scene.
For the rest of the world, who has no idea what we're talking about. Let's go back to this band and not fitting in and all of that stuff, because really what I hear when I listen to this and when I listen to it originally, where did someone figure out how to make good songs? Because good songs can be really quirky, but these songs do tell stories, and they're songs, right?
I was talking to this with one of the guys from Honey last night, actually, Kevin. Me and him were talking a little bit about like this thing that me and our producer, Zach from Fiddlar, he did our record. You're going to hate this. And yeah, right, totally. Oh, sweet. Here he comes. Yeah, he's coming at us. one thing me and him talked about like for hours on end a lot was like doing the thing where you put a catchy, happy song with sad and dark lyrics behind it. That's my favorite type of writing. That's what I fell in love with Fiddlar for. It's the most fun thing because you get all these kids coming to shows and you get freaking out and going crazy, and then maybe they get home and be like, what was he talking about? That's actually pretty messed up. But no, it is good. Yeah, I agree. Totally. And that's, I think, where we fall into the whole not fitting in thing, because a lot of bands, and there were a lot of bands that came out at the same time as us, where they're just talking about, you know, drinking and getting hammered and, you know, doing drugs and stuff, which we don't have a drug problem, thank God. We'd like to drink, but we don't fall into the same category. So it's just kind of, that was where we, charming, that's kind of the charming stories and lyrics. I don't think I'm a really good storyteller, but I think we do pretty well as helping people relate to situations that I'm going through at the time, which are pretty common situations of like just falling out of love and being a dick. I don't know. Just not being a good guy sometimes. So
harassing some guy to produce your record, you know, just like harassment. That's another great methodology to get someone to produce your record, right? You harass them. But obviously he heard some of your music and he liked it.
Yeah, we were huge Fiddlar fans. That was my first big favorite band when I was out of high school. And it was when we started this band and we started doing this thing, it was like, okay, that's where we want to be. We want to be opening for Fiddlar, playing shows of Fiddlar, doing tours, whatever we can do. So I would email Fiddlar and I'd be like, hey man, please take us on tour. And they were like, oh, well, throw them on this stupid San Diego show. Like, so we did that. We did like two San Diego shows with them. It was great while they were still little. And then finally, about maybe almost 2 years ago now, I emailed him again. I was like, hey man, please take us on tour. Look, we're kind of getting a little bigger. Got kind of a bit of a fan base now. Please, please, please. And he was like, hey dude, you know, all right, I hear you, but there's no tours right now. I have a different idea though. And he was like, I produce records for Fiddlar. I was brought up in the engineering field with a couple of my friends of mine in studios. What if I do a song? And I was like, yeah, that'd be so sick. That'd be amazing. And we freaked out, called Richard. I was like, dude, you're not gonna believe what just happened. And then after we went up to the song and ended up still kind of harassing him, be like, yeah man, I mean, if you want to do a record, that'd be great, like, we're down. And he was like, well, let me see, I gotta finish the Fiddlar record right now. They were working on their second one at the time. And he was like, and we'll see where it goes. And he came back from that and he was like, all right dude, you want to do a full record? And we were like, yeah, thank God.
However, then you don't know what you're in for. So who set up this process, this torturous process that you went through of writing and demos? I mean, you know, you've talked about this a lot, so I want to kind of set it straight, because it's always kind of published as that it was a difficult process to make this record. Was it a difficult process to make this record?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it was difficult in the normal ways. It was also difficult in a lot of violent ways as well, you know.
So talk to me about the violent ways, though.
Zach was, he's really, and I'm not even gonna say that they're problems, they're just really kind of abusive ways to go out producing a record, and great ways, because at the time, I had just broken up with my girlfriend, and we were doing the band thing I was always doing, and it was kind of like, okay, this is where my life is going right now. And so one thing Zach did for a couple songs is he was like, hey man, you know, he's like, let's get you drunk. Some of the first vocal takes, it was for the songs Of Age and the songs Kids. And it was just me and Zach up in the studio. It was like nighttime, and he's like, "All right, you know what, dude? Let's get you drunk. Let's go get some beer." And he was sober, so he was stoked. He was like, "Let's go to the liquor store, man. I'm gonna get you the beer. I'm gonna buy it. I'm gonna open it for you because I haven't done that in like a year." Yeah, exactly, exactly. So we go over and we get like a six pack and a pint of whiskey, and we just start talking. And I start drinking. The beers start disappearing. They're gone. Then I start working on the whiskey, and we're talking. He starts talking to my ex girlfriend, and he's like, "So tell me, like, what happened? Like, you really messed up, huh?" And he was just starting to get me down. And I was like, oh, dude, I don't know. And I started, and the whiskey starts disappearing. And I'm sitting there, and we get a little depressing. He's like, oh, he's like, all right. He's like, let's go do a take. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, let's go. I mean, what? It's like 11 o'clock at night. What else are we going to do? He's like, okay. So I get up, and as soon as I stand up, I'm like, oh, God, this is bad. We go in there, and we start working on one of the songs of age, which is actually, it was a really kind of sad song. Mm-hmm. And I started getting upset, and I started kind of getting bummed out. I'm like, dude, I don't think I sound very good. He was like, no, man, it sounds good. You got this. Keep going. I was like, I think I need more alcohol. And he's like, okay. And so he's like, let's go. Go back to the liquor store, buy another pint of whiskey, go back upstairs. And he's like, all right, dude, let's go. Drink some whiskey. Get the song going. Remember, your girlfriend, it's not love you anymore. Nothing's going good for you. Kind of stuff like that. You know, you call me a pussy. You do all this stuff. And eventually, I finished the two songs, and I was bawling, and I was puking, and I was on the floor in the bathroom crying that I was going to die and that nobody loved me anymore and that I sounded like a loser. And he was like, this is great. This is perfect. This is exactly what I wanted out of you tonight. But he listened to the vocal takes the next day, and he was like, you know what? This actually works, but I'm never, ever doing that again for you. He was like, that was such a mess. And I remember waking up the next day just in the studio. I was like naked in my little bed I had. I was like, dude, I'm so sorry. He was like, no, it was good. We got everything out of you. We need to get out of you. So.
Okay, but here's the bonus point. So how do you do those songs live now?
Same thing. Get completely hammered just for those two songs. No. those are definitely two good emotional songs, but they're more a lot of fun to play when you're drunk because it's fun to, you know, manipulate the crowd like that and be like all emotional and funny, and that's really fun. But we usually just go up there and do them at, you know, kind of express style and just kind of blast it out. Yeah, loose, exactly.
Where was the transition from the dude who met you outside the club and said, I'm running an indie label, to Danger Bird?
Pretty much from that first show, I'd started working with this guy Joe, who ran that record label Postmark Records, and for the first like 2 years of our band, he was basically just our investor. And like, it was such a small record label, it's really just him. And so whenever we had a record we wanted to put out or record or something, he'd just foot the costs and we'd recoup. And it was just like that, just pretty basic record label situation. But I ended up becoming just super good friends with the guy. And his whole point from day one was to be like, hey, like, I want you guys to get huge one day. I mean, this is, if you guys make it, then it's going to benefit me too. You know, he's had experience in the record and music industry for a decade. So he's, I think, found this opportunity to kind of do it again, and he kind of jumped on it. So it was really cool for him, and it was cool for us too, because we're both benefiting each other. And so we do that for a couple of years, and we made a couple of records, a couple of EPs, and played shows all over and started growing. And then that whole situation with our second album, which we just talked about, producing with Zach and everything, came about. And once the record was finished, we were just like thinking about it, like, man, like, we're gonna need, I think, a bigger label to release this, because, you know, so much work has been put into this. You know, we're at a point now where it would make sense to reach a bigger audience. So Zach was really helpful and just sent it around to a bunch of labels and friends that he knew, people he knew in the industry, and Danger Bird bit.
So yeah, one thing we've talked about as a band many, many times, even including today actually, is how important self-awareness is as being a band, because there's a lot of bands who are as simple, and it's as simple as you have three guitars and a drummer. And if you go up there and you try to be like the shit, and you're not, you gotta have some like sense of either comedic relief or just a good sense of who you actually are. And that's the thing I think we've thrived off of for the past almost 4 years now, is being the thing that when you walk up on stage, I think we look like four really basic dudes. I think that makes people comfortable. I think that's like a lot of our draw, is that we look normal.
Yeah.
And we don't look like we're like, all right, you made a fuck. So it's like,
well, yeah, we were talking about this earlier today, and we were saying like, you know, if you're lucky enough to call this your job, where you go up on stage and play dumb songs every night, you have to recognize just how crazy that is. Like, it's ridiculous that anyone can do, you get paid. So you gotta, yeah, you definitely have to just like be able to look at that in perspective and be like, wow, this is ridiculous that this is even happening right now.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and what it is two of your songs on the outside and then songs by others in between.